Welcome to So Ordered, where we create audio readings of SCOTUS decisions to make them more accessible to the public. At the time of creating this podcast, the Supreme Court of the United States does not release audio of the court's decisions. Our mission is to make it so the public can be better informed on decisions of the court by using AI to generate audio of written opinions. The case before us today is Watson v. Republican National Committee, docket number 241260, decided June 29, 2026. Before reading the opinion itself, here is a brief summary of the case and the questions presented. Three federal Election Day statutes set the day for the election of representatives, senators, and the president on a Tuesday in November. Mississippi permits certain residents, such as college students away from home and senior citizens, to vote in federal elections by absentee ballot, and it is one of roughly 30 states that count at least some absentee ballots mailed by Election Day, but received afterward, in Mississippi. An absentee ballot must be postmarked on or before the date of the election and received by the registrar no more than 5 business days after the election. In 2024, the Republican National Committee, the Mississippi Republican Party, and various individuals sued the Mississippi Secretary of State and several election officials, contending that the federal statutes use the word election to refer to both ballot casting and ballot receipt, and so set a deadline for both. The district court granted summary judgment to Mississippi, and the Fifth Circuit reversed, holding that Mississippi's statute is preempted because the federal Election Day statutes require ballots to be received by Election Day. The question presented was whether the federal Election Day statutes preempt a state law that allows ballots that are cast by federal Election Day to be received by election officials after that day. The court held, the federal Election Day statutes do not prevent Mississippi from counting absentee ballots postmarked by Election Day, but received up to 5 days thereafter. Nothing in the federal Election Day statutes requires ballots to be received by Election Day. The defining element of an election has always been the electorate's choice of candidate, and that choice is made when voting is complete, not when ballots are received. A related federal statute, the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, confirms that while federal law dictates when ballots must be cast, state law governs when they must be received. Justice Barrett delivered the opinion of the court, in which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson joined. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justices Thomas and Gorsuch joined, and in which Justice Kavanaugh joined as to all but Parts 2, C2, and 3. As a reminder, the audio is an AI-generated reading of a published opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States. The voice you will hear has been synthesized to loosely resemble that of the justice that wrote the opinion. All tone, inflection, pacing, and emphasis are produced by the AI model and should not be attributed to any justice. The text itself has been lightly adapted to aid in the creation of the spoken delivery. This is a project to attempt to make court decisions more accessible to the public, and any substantive changes during the reading are completely unintentional. Please visit www.supremecourt.gov to read the opinion published by the court. You can find a link directly to the opinion in this episode's description. As the audio is AI-generated, you may hear some audio glitches, including odd pronunciation, noticeable pauses, or repeated words. We do our best to remove these and hope they do not impact your listening experience. To leave us feedback on the show or to learn more about the podcast, please visit so-ordered.org. The following is the opinion of the court in Watson v. Republican National Committee.
Three federal statutes set the day for the election of representatives, senators, and the president. A Mississippi law permits the counting of absentee ballots postmarked by Election Day but received up to 5 days later. We must decide whether the federal Election Day statutes preempt Mississippi's law. They do not. The Constitution's Elections Clause empowers state legislatures to prescribe the times, places, and manner of holding congressional elections. Congress may override most of these choices. By default, however, responsibility for the mechanics of congressional elections belongs to states. As Alexander Hamilton put it, the Constitution lodges power over congressional elections in state legislatures primarily, and in Congress ultimately. The Constitution's system for presidential elections is similar. State legislatures may direct the manner of appointing electors to vote for president and vice president, but Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes. Initially, Congress allowed states significant leeway with respect to the timing of elections. states had a 34-day window to appoint presidential electors and exercise total control over the timing of other federal elections. As soon became clear, this scheme was not the founding generation's finest. Fraud, or at least allegations of it, ran rampant because states could hold elections on different days. Voters could travel across the country, casting ballots in multiple states. So, in 1845, Congress enacted the first Election Day statute, setting presidential elections for the Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Allegations of fraud continued to plague the election of representatives, which still took place on different days in different states. Having one election day for the president and another for representatives was also burdensome, because citizens were forced to turn out to the polls on two different election days. Plus, the results in states with early elections could influence voting in states that lagged behind. So, in 1872, Congress intervened again, mandating that the election of representatives also take place on a single day, the same Tuesday specified in the Presidential Election Day statute. After the ratification of the 17th Amendment, Congress required senators to be elected on the same day as representatives. Today, each of the three Election Day statutes sets the day for the election on a Tuesday in November. In our nation's early years, voters had to cast their ballots in person in the district where they lived. Elections were lively public events, marked not only by continuous electioneering and political arguments, but also by picnics, drinking, and boisterous celebration. Public assembly was not just a matter of merriment, it also helped ensure that only those qualified to vote did so. Ballots were cast in the company of neighbors and under the watchful eyes of community leaders. For instance, under the Pennsylvania Constitution, a voter had to vote in an appropriate election district in order that his neighbors might be at hand to establish his right to vote if it were challenged, or to challenge if it were doubtful. Things started to change during the Civil War, when some states allowed soldiers to vote from afar by absentee ballot. Access to absentee voting expanded throughout the 20th century, and today, every state lets at least some residents vote absentee. In fact, federal law requires states to permit absentee voting in certain circumstances. Due dates for absentee ballots have shifted over time. During the Civil War, states that allowed absentee voting imposed an Election Day deadline for ballot receipt. But during World War I, states began counting absentee ballots received after Election Day. Today, roughly 30 states count at least some absentee ballots mailed by Election Day but received afterward. Mississippi is among them. In Mississippi, certain residents, like college students away from home and senior citizens, may vote in federal elections by absentee ballot. These voters may dispatch their ballots by mail or common carrier. All absentee ballots must be postmarked on or before the date of the election and received by the registrar no more than 5 business days after the election. In 2024, the Republican National Committee, the Mississippi Republican Party, and various individuals sued the Mississippi Secretary of State and several election officials, contending that federal law prevents Mississippi from counting absentee ballots received after Election Day. According to plaintiffs, the Election Day statutes use the word election to refer to two acts, ballot casting and ballot receipt. So by setting the day for the election, plaintiffs argue, these statutes set the deadline for both. The Libertarian Party of Mississippi filed a similar suit. The district court consolidated the cases, then granted summary judgment to Mississippi. The Fifth Circuit reversed, holding that Mississippi's statute is preempted because the federal Election Day statutes require ballots to be received by Election Day. It denied rehearing and rehearing en banc. We granted cert. The question before us is a narrow one about timing. Plaintiffs do not challenge the manner in which Mississippi carries out federal elections. They do not, for example, challenge the general practice of absentee voting. Nor do they challenge the use of the Postal Service or a common carrier to transmit ballots. Although the Election Day statutes refer to a particular day for the election, plaintiffs do not contend that everything must occur on that day. For instance, They do not object to early voting or dispute that officials may count votes and certify a winner after Election Day. Finally, this is not a case about the Constitution. We do not consider the scope of Congress's authority to regulate federal elections. The sole question before us is whether counting ballots postmarked by Election Day, but received up to 5 days later, violates the Federal Election Day statutes. The Federal Election Day statutes do not preempt Mississippi's law. The defining element of an election, the term used in all three federal statutes, has always been the electorate's choice of candidate. And a related federal statute, the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, UOCAVA, confirms that while federal law dictates when ballots must be cast, state law dictates when they must be received. As we have said before, the Federal Election Day statutes simply regulate the time of the election. The statute governing presidential elections provides that presidential electors shall be appointed, in each state, on Election Day, in accordance with the laws of the state enacted prior to Election Day. Election Day is defined as the Tuesday next after the first Monday in November, in every fourth year succeeding every election of a president and vice president held in each state. The statute governing House elections establishes the day for the election of representatives as the same Tuesday in November in every even-numbered year. The calendar for Senate elections follows suit. Senators are elected at the regular election, at which election a representative to Congress is regularly by law to be chosen. By setting the day for the election, these statutes set the day when the electorate must make its choice. It is a fundamental canon of statutory construction that words generally should be interpreted as taking their ordinary meaning at the time Congress enacted the statute. The Election Day statutes were enacted and amended across almost two centuries. At all relevant times, the word election was understood to mean the act of choosing a person to fill an office. We have likewise defined election as the expression of the electorate's choice. From time immemorial, we have observed, an election to public office has been in point of substance no more and no less than the expression by qualified electors of their choice of candidates. See Republican National Committee v. Democratic National Committee, decided in 2020, explaining that a fundamental aspect of an election is ballot casting, as distinguished from ballot receipt. And when we interpreted the Election Day statutes for the first, and until now, the only time, we again emphasized the voter's choice. In Foster, we explained that when the federal statutes speak of the election of a senator or representative, they plainly refer to the combined actions of voters and officials meant to make a final selection of an office holder. The electorate's choice is made when voting is complete, not when ballots are received. The most recent amendment to the Presidential Election Day statute bears this out. In 2022, Congress inserted the phrase Election Day into that statute and marked that day as a specific Tuesday. It then created an exception. When states modify the period of voting in response to certain force majeure events, the term Election Day shall include the modified period of voting. That Congress defined Election Day with reference to voting indicates that voting is the act governed by the statute. A related statute, UOCAVA, reinforces the point. It is the most rudimentary rule of statutory interpretation that courts do not interpret statutes in isolation, but in the context of the corpus juris of which they are a part, including later enacted statutes. And UOCAVA confirms that while Congress has set the date by which absentee ballots must be cast, states have the power to set the date by which they must be received. UOCAVA requires states to permit absent military and overseas voters to cast absentee ballots in federal elections. As a backup, it establishes a federal absentee voting system. In detailing this system, UOCAVA repeatedly presupposes that ballot receipt is a matter of state law. For example, it specifies that a federal absentee ballot shall not be valid if the state provides an absentee ballot at least 60 days before the deadline for receipt of the state ballot under state law. It also mandates that the ballots of overseas military voters be delivered to the appropriate election officials not later than the date by which an absentee ballot must be received in order to be counted in the election. Finally, to avoid any double counting, UOCAVA provides that federal absentee ballots shall not be counted if a state receives the voter's state absentee ballot by the deadline for receipt of that ballot under state law. If the Election Day statutes established a nationwide ballot receipt deadline, these references to state ballot receipt deadlines would make little sense. Finally, this interpretation of the Election Day statutes is consistent with the way the Constitution treats elections. Although most voting in our country's early days occurred in person, making casting and receipt simultaneous, that was not true of the Electoral College. For that, the Constitution establishes a system somewhat analogous to absentee voting. Presidential electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot, and then transmit their votes to the seat of the government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate for counting. The Constitution requires the day on which the electors shall give their votes to be the same throughout the United States. But it says nothing about the day for receipt and, of course, 18th century modes of transmission did not offer same-day delivery. The Constitution therefore envisions a system in which receipt is necessarily divorced from voting, and it sets the crucial uniform day as the day of voting, leaving receipt to happen down the line. The federal Election Day statutes follow the same pattern. They set when the people shall give their votes, but leave open when those votes must be received. In sum, the Election Day statutes require the electorate's choice to be made on Election Day. That occurs so long as Election Day is the deadline for individuals to vote, as it is in Mississippi. But the Election Day statutes do not set a deadline for ballot receipt, so they do not prevent Mississippi from counting ballots postmarked before Election Day yet received afterward. Plaintiffs, echoed by the dissent, accept that the ordinary meaning of election is choice. Nonetheless, they argue that statutes speaking only of choice set a deadline for receipt. Short on textual support for that proposition, they appeal to historical practice, precedent, and policy. But the historical practice they identify is not dispositive. They overread our precedent, and policy cannot override the words Congress chose. When it comes to the ordinary usage of the word election, there is no dispute. An election is the act of choosing a person to fill an office. Still, both the dissent and plaintiffs argue that choice requires more than ballot casting. According to the dissent, ballot receipt is necessary because it renders the electorate's choice authoritative. But the dissent never says what authoritative means, much less why ballot receipt carries this transformative power. Plaintiffs, for their part, suggest that ballot receipt is significant because it marks the point at which we can say who won. But plaintiffs fail to explain why the electorate's choice is not made until we know who won. And in any event, we do not know who won when all ballots are received. Many other acts must occur first. Voter qualifications must be adjudicated, ballots authenticated, and votes counted. Plaintiffs have no statutory basis for making ballot receipt the magic moment. Lacking a statutory foothold, plaintiffs tracked closely by the dissent, pivot quickly to their primary argument, historical practice. They emphasize that in the mid to late 19th century, around the enactment of the first and second Election Day statutes, ballot receipt occurred on Election Day. And while one might dismiss this timing as a byproduct of in-person voting, plaintiffs insist that the advent of absentee voting proves otherwise. When some states authorized soldiers to vote by mail during the Civil War, ballot casting and ballot receipt were no longer simultaneous, so these states could have allowed a grace period for receipt. But none did. Instead, plaintiffs contend, ballots traveling through the war-torn country were not counted unless they were received by Election Day. Why would any state be so exacting, plaintiffs ask, if federal law did not demand it? Notably, plaintiffs admit that they cannot precisely tie this historical practice to the text of the Election Day statutes. That is a delicately put understatement. Plaintiff's theory is that if the relevant states could have changed the rules, they would have changed the rules. Yet despite a deep dive into the historical record, plaintiffs have found no evidence that any of these states wanted to extend ballot receipt deadlines, much less that they thought federal law prevented them from doing so. Plaintiffs treat this federal law made me do it theory as obvious, but state legislatures may have used an election day deadline for any number of reasons. For instance, they might have shared plaintiffs' view that an election day deadline avoids the appearance of fraud from late arriving ballots. They might have believed it essential to election integrity to open soldier ballots in the public's presence, which was possible only if ballots arrived by the day the community gathered for in-person voting. They might have thought it efficient for election officials to accept absentee ballots when the officials were already assembled for in-person voting. Frankly, in this first experiment with absentee voting, extending the deadline might not have even occurred to them. Habit has force, even in wartime. Plaintiffs assume that state legislatures had a single goal, enabling the soldier vote, and went as far as they could to achieve it. But as we have frequently observed, no statute pursues a single policy at all costs. That principle applies to wartime statutes too. At bottom, plaintiffs' theory is that because we are governed by 19th century election day laws, we are also governed by 19th century voting practices. Carried to its logical conclusion, this theory would call into question the way modern elections work. As plaintiffs acknowledge, states might need to adjudicate voter qualifications by election day, as was done in the 19th century. Election officials suggest that doing so would be difficult, if not impossible. After all, America's population has grown since then, as has the portion of its population eligible to vote and the practice of absentee voting. The neighborhood watch approach to election security no longer suffices. States have developed more sophisticated methods of adjudicating voter qualifications. Early voting would also be at risk, because in the 19th century, the polls were open only on election day itself. If these results were dictated by ordinary meaning, we would of course be bound to see them through. But historical practice, detached from statutory text, is not controlling. Statutes do not trap in amber every contemporary practice on the same subject matter. Moreover, even accepting plaintiffs' interpretive approach, it is not clear why 19th century election practices are dispositive. Plaintiffs focus on them because the first two election day statutes were enacted in that period. But shortly after the third statute was enacted in 1914, absentee voting became popular again as a result of World War I. And this time, some states began counting absentee ballots received after Election Day. If we interpret the Election Day statutes by drawing inferences from state behavior, it is unclear why we cannot account for the time of the third statute, too. And once we move beyond the 19th century, historical practice undercuts plaintiffs' position. In any event, plaintiffs have another problem. Their interpretation of the Election Day statutes is at odds with Yo-Kava, which, as discussed, presupposes that states retain the power to set ballot receipt deadlines. Plaintiffs and their amicus, the United States, offer various ways to reconcile their interpretation of the Election Day statutes with Yo-Kava. Their theories are unpersuasive. Plaintiffs and the United States cannot even agree among themselves on how this reconciliation should work. The United States argues that Yo-Kava creates an exception to the ballot receipt deadline set by the Election Day statutes. In its view, states may count the absentee ballots of military and overseas voters even if they arrive after Election Day. Plaintiffs cannot quite stomach that interpretation, and for good reason, Yo-Kava is not worded like an exception. It does not authorize states to create ballot receipt deadlines. Rather, it presumes that states have that authority already. See, for example, 52 U.S.C., Section 2303b, stating, "Federal absentee ballots shall not be counted if a state receives the voter's state absentee ballot by the deadline for receipt of that ballot under state law." Plaintiffs' efforts to explain Yo-Kava fare no better. Plaintiffs initially argued that Yo-Kava recognizes states' authority to set ballot receipt deadlines before but not after Election Day, arguing that Congress tied the ballot receipt deadline to state law because at least one state at the time required absentee ballots to be received before Election Day. But Yo-Kava's text draws no such distinction, and by the time oral argument rolled around, plaintiffs had seemingly abandoned the point. Instead, they stressed that Yokava also applies to other elections, like primaries, that the election day statutes do not govern. And that, the argument goes, is the reason why Yokava incorporates state ballot receipt deadlines. But this interpretation of the statute does not work either. Yokava presupposes that the deadline for ballot receipt is uniformly a matter of state law. It does not distinguish between general and other elections. And the provision directing the president's designee to ensure that ballots of overseas military voters are received by state officials not later than the date by which an absentee ballot must be received in order to be counted applies only to regularly scheduled general elections, exactly the elections for which plaintiffs claim the election day statutes already set a uniform ballot receipt deadline. Given the difficulties of plaintiffs' interpretation, it is little wonder that roughly 30 states count military and overseas voters' absentee ballots that arrive after Election Day. Next, plaintiffs turn to precedent. They argue that when Foster defines election as the combined actions of voters and officials meant to make a final selection of an officeholder, it must mean the combined actions of ballot casting and receipt. Foster, however, does not support that conclusion. In Foster, we considered whether Louisiana's system for open primary elections was consistent with the federal election day statutes. Unlike a conventional party-run primary, Louisiana's primary was run by the state. And if a candidate got a majority of votes in the primary, that was it. The candidate was elected, and no further act was done on federal election day to fill the office in question. While this system was in place, over 80% of the contested congressional elections in Louisiana ended as a matter of law with the open primary. We held that this system violated the federal election day statutes because the contested selection of candidates could be concluded as a matter of law before the federal election day. Foster is not about ballot receipt and nowhere mentions it. In fact, Foster does not address absentee voting at all. It decides a narrow issue narrowly, holding only that an election may not be consummated prior to Federal Election Day. True, Foster defines election to involve the combined actions of voters and officials, but there is no reason to think that Foster is referring to the back-end act of ballot receipt rather than the front-end acts necessary for the electorate to make its choice, like establishing the rules for the election, setting up polling sites, or providing ballots. Foster specifically refuses to isolate precisely what acts a state must cause to be done on Election Day. Thus, plaintiffs overread Foster to do exactly what it disavows. Plaintiffs, joined by the dissent, also place significant weight on a decision from the Montana Supreme Court, Maddox v. Board of State Canvassers, decided in 1944. Maddox held unlawful a new Montana statute that allowed soldier ballots to be received after Election Day, but Maddox turned on existing state law, which the new law did not amend or repeal. An existing statute required all ballots to be delivered to the election officials and deposited in the ballot box before the closing of the polls on Election Day. Since the state law provided for voting by ballots deposited with the election officials, Maddox reasoned, that act must be completed on the day designated by state and federal laws. Maddox thus viewed receipt as governed by state, not federal, law. Indeed, both the concurring and dissenting opinions stressed that the majority's opinion left the Montana legislature free to authorize the reception of and counting of ballots subsequent to the election day fixed by law. The majority does not question the right of the legislature to make provision for the counting of ballots which are not received until after Election Day. So if Maddox is instructive, it is a point in favor of Mississippi's interpretation, not plaintiffs. And if plaintiffs accept the premise that interpretations of the Election Day statutes from the 1940s are relevant, they are up against more than Maddox. During the 1940s, seven other states authorized the receipt of ballots after Election Day, reflecting the belief that they were free to do so. Plaintiffs offer no evidence that any of these laws was ever even challenged under the Election Day statutes. In addition, the same year that Maddox was decided, Congress passed a law providing that any extension of time for the receipt of absentee ballots permitted by state laws shall apply to special federal war ballots cast by soldiers. This precursor to Uokava suggests that Congress itself did not understand the federal Election Day laws to prevent states from setting the deadline for ballot receipt after Election Day. Finally, plaintiffs assert that requiring ballots to be received by Election Day protects election integrity and increases voter confidence in election results. As we have said time and again, however, policy arguments are properly directed to legislatures, not courts. The question today is not whether requiring ballots to be received by Election Day is a good or bad idea. The question is whether the idea has made its way into the United States Code. Regardless, plaintiffs' definition of election would do little to address the concerns they identify. Plaintiffs and the dissent argue that if we uphold Mississippi's law, states could put party bosses, ballot harvesters, or Uber drivers in charge of collecting ballots. Yet this would also be permissible under their interpretation, so long as the ballots are delivered by Election Day. As the dissent concedes, the relevant statutes regulate only the timing of election processes, not their manner. So concerns about the manner of ballot delivery have nothing to do with this case. Plaintiffs also stress that Mississippi's law may give rise to the appearance of fraud, because election results may appear to flip after Election Day. This is a significant concern. See Democratic National Committee v. Wisconsin State Legislature, decided in 2020, where Justice Kavanaugh, concurring in denial of application to vacate stay, wrote, discussing the chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensue if thousands of absentee ballots flow in after Election Day and potentially flip the results of an election. But even under plaintiff's interpretation, last-minute flips are possible because the Election Day statutes set no deadline for counting ballots or certifying election results. Election fraud and its appearance are serious issues. Like other such issues, however, they must be addressed through the democratic process. The Election Day statutes are proof of concept. When voting on different days in different states sparked allegations of fraud, Congress set a nationally uniform deadline for voting. If varied deadlines for ballot receipt similarly call for a national solution, the American people must choose it through their elected representatives. There is one last late-breaking matter. For the first time in their reply briefs before the Fifth Circuit, plaintiffs argued that Mississippi's election system violates the Election Day statutes because the Postal Service and common carriers allow mail to be recalled. According to plaintiffs, a voter who regrets her choice after Election Day may nullify her vote by recalling her ballot from the Postal Service or a common carrier before it is delivered to election officials. And that, plaintiffs insist, means that the electorate's choice is not actually made as of Election Day. Plaintiffs have never independently challenged this aspect of Mississippi law. Ballot recall was not the basis for this litigation. It is nowhere mentioned in plaintiffs' complaints. Even now, plaintiffs frame the possibility of post-Election Day recall as simply one reason why counting ballots received after Election Day violates the federal Election Day statutes. For its part, Mississippi denies that voters are allowed to recall their ballots, and it does not dispute that post-Election Day recall would violate the Election Day statutes. Two principles are important here. First, post-Election Day receipt, considered on its own, does not conflict with the Election Day statutes. Second, state law is preempted by the federal Election Day statutes only so far as the conflict extends. So even if plaintiffs are right about Mississippi law, they would still lose the challenge they have pressed in this litigation, that post-Election Day ballot receipt is itself unlawful. The framers recognized the difficulty of crafting election laws applicable to every probable change in the situation of the country. So instead of constitutionalizing election law, they decided that a discretionary power over elections needed to be lodged somewhere. Suffice it to say, that power was not lodged in this court. The Election Day statutes say nothing about ballot receipt, and we cannot add to the words Congress chose. The judgment of the Court of Appeals is reversed, and the case is remanded for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. It is so ordered.